Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, coming to you from San Luis Obispo, California.
Where you stand? LA living grid locked in the fast lane. Trying to strike a rich match, play my cash game. At least a couple degrees from the coast where they got bunnies and bricks. Here with Dave Denis. Cal Poly basketball alum, the unofficial, he was described last night, Dave, you were described last night as the unofficial spokesman for the inaugural Cal Poly Division I basketball team. How's it going?
It's going well, Owen. We're happy to be here. Glad we got everybody back that made it through that year. And it's a special weekend for all of us to take a stroll down memory lane here and just meet everybody. Everybody's been great so far, meeting people like you, the administration, the new players. It's been a good experience.
Yeah. I mean, I think the program has really kind of taken another step, obviously, not just with the tournament, but with other in other aspects as well over the past few years. And I see that being here as well. I want to kind of start off, of course, we know the kind of context over the last few years. It's been publicized some, especially locally here. JD's done a few articles in the Tribune. And have you ever met JD in person?
I have not.
So maybe tonight you'll get to see him. There's been articles about the team. Went 1-26 that first year. Was it what year was it?
It was the 94-95 season.
Okay, I got it. And there was a lot of tumult leading up to it, and we'll talk a little bit about that too, even though you weren't here necessarily during that time. Can you kind of describe how you ended up? Where are you from? How did you end up at Cal Poly?
So I went to I graduated high school from Santa Fe High School in 1990, just north of San Francisco, and then I went to Santa Rosa Junior College for 3 years, and again, Northern California, and then I applied to Cal Poly. It was the only school I applied to, and I kind of talked about this last night. It was because I heard they were going to Division
One. So just like for the record, like I wish I would have just had my recorder here last night and just hit record, and that would have been like the easiest podcast in the world. But you told some really great stories about kind of how you ended up here. So yeah,
it was the only school I applied to because I knew they were going to Division One, and I wanted to chase a Division One dream, and so I literally just rented a U-Haul. I had never visited Cal Poly. I'd never been to San Luis Obispo before. I drove down here. I didn't know a soul.
And driving down here in 1994 is a little different than if you were doing the same thing nowadays. Nowadays you have, I think, like a parachute, you know, really, when you talk about a cell phone with internet access. I mean, you know, a GPS. There's none of that back then. You're probably just looking for the road sign. Okay, am I in San Luis Obispo yet? I don't know.
Yeah, it's funny you mention that because when I drove down here, I had a U-Haul, and I asked my dad because I went down by myself, and I said, well, where do I drop this U-Haul off when I get down there, right? And like today, you just put in the GPS.
Right.
So the U-Haul rental station is out by the airport.
Okay. Uh-huh.
So I had to find the airport. I had a bike. I had to get on my bike and ride back to the dorms.
After you dropped everything off in the dorms.
Right. And I just kind of was looking for that P on the hill. I knew if I could find the P, I could get back to Cal, you know, to the campus. So that's how, and then it's kind of crazy, right? And that's one of the...
Well, and that was totally normal within the realm of whatever. And so, you know, like we're not here to like talk about how cell phones have changed the world, but I mean, you know, that was a normal thing that people had to deal with.
I love comparing how things were 20 years ago as opposed to now, like... Just you and I meeting here today, right? A couple of text messages, boom, and you meet. 20 years ago, you might have said, well, okay, can you meet me at the gym at 12? If that guy doesn't show up, he doesn't show up.
Well, last night when we were talking about meeting together, I would have had to say, we need to meet, you know, if you don't want to tape it right now, then we need to do it at, you know, we need to pick a time now.
Right.
And instead it was just like, yeah, I have your number now. We'll just, you know, connect later.
Yeah, so things like that make it a lot easier.
Yeah.
But yeah, just to continue with that, I met Jim.
Jim Croy,
who's to my left here. We met in 1993. So Cal Poly's last Division II season was the 93-94 season.
So he was a freshman and you were a junior?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. I was a junior college transfer. And that year before, we played five Division I teams. We played University of San Francisco, Long Beach State, Fresno State, Montana, and Northern Arizona to kind of prep us for the next upcoming year.
Uh-huh.
And we actually did better in some of those games.
So the vote had already gone through.
Correct.
You guys knew that was happening. It was just like, it was just a done deal. It was just a progression of 1 year and then another year, and then you would have been Division I.
Correct.
Yeah, okay.
That's exactly right.
Okay. So you played five teams. How'd those games go?
Better than some of the teams that we did the next year, the first year of Division I. Like, we played Montana here, and only lost by six or seven.
And the next year we played them at Montana, lost by like 40. So it kind of gave us a little taste, a little snapshot what we were in for.
Yeah. So you get on campus here, and you, like you said, you didn't know Cal Poly very well. The coach didn't really know who you were. So describe how that went.
Yeah, so I pretty much just walked into Coach Beeson's office. I tried to get in contact with him before I came down here, but not as easy as it would be today. No email.
Right. You have to actually send a letter, or you have to call a number of times and hope he's there.
Right, and when you're a walk-on, no matter who you are, you're the last priority of the coach because he's got 12 scholarship guys, and they got to spend time with them. So I went through the conditioning program, and I just barely made the team. I went from the guy who was putting down the baskets and sweeping the floor to, you know, a guy ended up redshirting, another guy got hurt, so I kind of snuck in there that way.
Okay. In terms of making the team, the last division 2 year.
Yes.
And then, so what was like the lead up around campus? This is something that you didn't maybe address last night, but it was addressed in JD's articles and things like that. It just seems really interesting to me, different campus climates and how the campus is now towards athletics versus how it was then towards athletics. And obviously you weren't here when the vote was happening, but you got to see the aftermath of everything that happened. How would you describe just the climate around sports, around athletics, around the basketball team when you got here?
Not a big priority. So academics is first at Cal Poly.
Sure.
So the thought and the scuttlebutt around campus of Cal Poly going Division I basketball, not a really big deal, to be honest with you. It was just, it's something the school is doing, something the university is doing.
And I grew up around here, so I was probably, I don't know, what, in 93, I was 12 or 13. And it seems like I would have had more of a consciousness of it, being a guy who probably when I was 12 or 13 was watching ESPN on a daily basis, watching Duke and North Carolina or whatever ESPN was pushing at that time. You know, when you think about or when you look at, I always think that it kind of should have been a bigger deal, especially around San Luis Obispo, the fact that you're on the same division as all these teams at that point, right?
Right. You'd think that. Right. But that year leading up to the first year, we were 9-17 the last. So it's not like we were setting the house on fire as a division.
In Division II, right.
Right. Uh-huh. So, you know, the writing was kind of on the wall. And I tell people, you got to have players to win. You got to have, and that's one of the biggest differences. Cal Poly has a lot better players now, 20 years later. You can't have too many Dave Dineens on your team playing 30 minutes a game and hope to win. Not at Stanford, not against, you know, UC Santa Barbara, schools like that. You just can't do it.
Right, against some of those other squads. So, you got here, the campus is kind of, you know, not dead to sports, but definitely not the priority. Tell me about the head coach and meeting him and kind of how that interaction went.
So the funny thing about Coach Beeson is, again, when you're a walk-on, no matter who you are, they're not going to spend a lot of time with you. And he let me go through the conditioning program, and eventually, you know, I got into school on my own, so it's not like I was on scholarship. He didn't have to spend any time with me. I was low maintenance.
Yeah.
I'd already had all my housing taken care of and everything. The funny thing, Owen, is after that first year I played, my junior year, I had some good games. Like, I had 15 points at Northern Arizona. I had some good games. And then after that season, I thought, you know, I'd have a pretty good shot of being on the team the next year. Before I left for the summer, Coach Beeson said, you know, you realize you're going to have to try out for the team
again
next year. Because they had recruited like 7 new guys.
Okay.
And supposedly those guys were Division I athletes and Division I players. Unfortunately, about 4 of them didn't make it.
Right. And when you say didn't make it, maybe some of them saw campus but didn't end up finishing the season kind of thing? Or
even worse than that. Yeah. One guy got arrested. Another one, 2 of them were academically eligible. They ended up redshirting one of those guys. So out of those 7 guys, I don't think one of them ended up earning their degree from Cal Poly San Luis Obispo.
Interesting. Yeah. And when you're just starting out a program, there's probably some chances you have to take in that direction on guys and stuff like
exactly
that.
Exactly right.
And maybe none of those obviously panned out. So I want to hear some of the stories about the season as you described them last night in terms of the games that you played. You guys, you're in an ESPN 30 for 30 on the Boston College point guard there. So can you describe that? That was your guys' first game that year, right?
Yeah, the first game in Cal Poly Division I history was at Boston College in November 1994. And it was kind of the heyday, I call it, of the Big East basketball. Guys like Allen Iverson, Ray Allen, names that people know. And Boston College had just beaten North Carolina to make it to the Final Eight the year before. and they had a great facility there at Boston College, just in a, you know, a beautiful campus, Ivy and everything. And we got smashed that game. I mean, they just pounded the ball inside, because at that level, Owen, the post players are 6'11", 240, sure. 6'9", 255.
Sure. Sure.
The guards are 6'3", 210, but they can run like they're...
And there was a much wider, even if you had been in Division I for a while, there was a much wider gap between a Long Beach State at that point and a Big East team, or a, you know, a lot of the teams that are currently in the Big West. Mid-majors weren't mid, there was like low majors and high majors. There weren't a lot of like mid-level teams in terms of athletes. If you were a good athlete, you were going to be, you know, a 12th man on a Big East team rather than a player who played on a team that was, you know, in what is now the Big West, for instance.
Correct, yeah, you're exactly right. The size and athleticism level back then and today. So at that time, there was 301 Division I basketball teams in the country. Now there's 351, I believe, and we were 301. Okay. We were at the bottom. Okay. I mean, and the funny thing, you look back on it, we weren't, I mean, I won 38 straight games in high school. I was all Bay Area, thinking I was pretty good, you know? And it's not like the players on our team were horrible. I mean, like Jim Croy out there, he was all Bay Area, really good player, but there's a big difference. And as you know, I talk to parents sometimes and they go, like, my kid's not playing. And sometimes you have to say, well, you know what? You want to tell them they're just not good enough, right? There's other kids that are just better. They're better athletes, they're stronger, they work harder. So you're exactly right. There's the size and explosiveness when you get to this level is extremely different.
A little different. So tell me, when you got to Boston College, like where's your head, where are your eyes? Like you walk into that gym. I know I heard Hans talk about it yesterday, last night, in terms of like walking into this place and having coached, I think, at King City the year before,
yes.
And now he's coaching against Boston. Yeah. He was coaching against Gonzalez or something, and then at Boston College the next year.
Yeah, I remember I got to the line early that game, and my first thing I said to myself is, don't airball the free throw, because it had a deep backdrop.
Yeah.
You know, there's you know, close to 10,000 people in there. It was probably the biggest crowd I ever played in my life. And I'm thinking to myself, don't embarrass yourself. And I think I was like 1 out of 2. I was just happy the ball went in.
Yeah.
You know, I was probably an 83% free throw shooter, and here I am, just don't airball it. So, yeah, you're awestruck, and you cannot be successful and have that mentality. You know, you got to be able to, now you got to be able to go in those places and go, we're going to win this game. And we were just there happy to compete almost.
Yeah. So tell me some stories from the season. I know you guys played at Arizona State. I know you went down and, I mean, it wasn't really a roast, but you kind of gave it to a couple of the guys on your team or described some really fun stories. I really liked those stories. I don't know if it's easy for you to kind of, if you had your notes then and you don't now or whatever.
No. One story.
I want to hear some stories.
Yeah. One of the funny things, and again, I love talking about pre-cell phone and pre-internet, is we played at Arizona State. They made it to the Sweet 16 that year and lost to Kentucky, who I believe won the national championship that year. And I got dunked on by Mario Bennett, who had a cup of coffee in the NBA, played for the Lakers for about 4 years.
Yeah.
And it was on ESPN that night. And so I got back to my dorm room the next day, and there was like 6 messages from buddies, and they're all, we saw you on ESPN getting dunked on. Right, today you just get a text message or something like that.
Somebody would actually send you the video.
Yeah, or you could see it like that. And I didn't know, I didn't see it. But I remember they pressed the entire game, and their coach was Bill Frieder. And the year previous, when they had a big point-shaving scandal.
Yeah, okay.
Stephen Headache Smith, they were shaving points, and that came out like a couple years later. But they were pressing the whole game. And I remember we were down like 40, and the ball was inbounded, and Bill Frieder was the coach. And I looked at him with the ball, and I said, hey, man, why don't you take off the press? And I don't know if this is legit. And then he looks at me and just gives me the bird. Right? So I got 2 guys. We're down 40.
The coach, the other coach is giving you.
He flips me off. And to be honest, I'll keep it clean. I said, why don't you take off the press, you? And I swore at him, and he flipped me off. And the players on the Arizona State team were dying laughing. They're laughing because, you know, I came at him, you know.
Yeah,
I'm dribbling the ball, trying to get the ball. I'm like, why don't you take off the press, you? And he flipped me off. And, that was a pretty funny story.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah. And you went up to Stanford, Maples Pavilion, where Cal Poly played last year, actually, too.
Yeah.
And that's a really cool arena. I mean, to talk about, like, a Pac-12, like a tight – it's the closest thing I think maybe the Pac-12 or the West Coast has to like a Midwestern kind of a feel in terms of being right on top of everything. I mean, that was just a really cool arena. you played against what Brevin Knight and some of those guys at Stanford. So I really liked your Brevin Knight story too.
Yeah, the Brevin Knight story. So he had a good NBA career, 12 years in the NBA.
Oh, yeah.
High character individual. And so I'm from that area, and you heard this story last night, okay. But I went from like the fourth string point guard to starting at Stanford because we had so many issues off the court. And so like the third play of the game, I'm dribbling the ball up the court, and he steals it from me and goes in for a layup. Like, that shouldn't happen.
Picked it clean?
Picked it clean at half court, you know. Just got into me, picked it, laid it up. I couldn't
That's
even
catch it. Video, yeah, right? That's the probably going to show it tonight.
Yeah. I put it on there because I don't care. I thought I go, the guy's a pro, you know. What am I going to do? And so there's a foul like the next couple plays down. So I see him at half court, and I walk up to him, and I say, hey, is there any chance you could not pick me up full court? And he looks at me, and he's all like, man, what are you talking about? I said, it's kind of, I'm from this area. It's kind of a homecoming game for me. Is there, I said, I'll just
First
bring
of
the
all,
ball.
I have the balls to ask.
Yes. Because I knew, Owen, it could get really bad. Like, I did not want this guy picking me up full court and picking me.
Every time down the court.
Right. I had to try something, right?
And it's exhausting, too.
Yes, when somebody turns you five times before you can get over half court. Yeah. And I said, you know, I'll start the offense, I'll run to the corner, and I won't even look to score. And he's looking at me like I'm on drugs.
You're making right? a deal with him.
Yes, and that's the kind of stuff you don't really, that doesn't happen in a college basketball game. You know, you would think his reaction would be, I'm going to get into this guy even more. But for some reason, he took pity on me and did not pick me up full court after that.
He was cool about it.
Yeah.
Interesting.
He was cool
about
it.
Maybe it was his coach that was cool about it.
I don't think so. I was expecting his coach, Mike Montgomery, who went on to coach the Golden State Warriors and just retired.
And Cal, right?
Yep. Yeah, I was expecting him to say, like, get into him, pick him up. Yeah. But they had so much firepower. I think they set the Stanford record for free throws in a game. They got to the line like 49 times that game. They just pounded inside every time.
Wow.
They had Tim Young, who played in the NBA a little bit, 7 feet, 250.
So random, like how things come together in college basketball in California. I think this is the case. I might be making it up. Trevor John, who's a freshman on this team, sure. I think his dad was on Mike Montgomery's staff at Cal.
No way. Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah. What's his dad's name? Do you know?
I'm not sure. That's okay. John.
Yeah. Because I think his dad maybe coached at San Jose State as well.
Possibly, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so random. I don't know how long he was on Montgomery's staff or whether that was something. Yeah,
J. John?
Maybe, yeah. Could be.
Yeah, the name sounds familiar.
So the Brevin Knight story was one of my favorites. How about your teammates? Or, like, first, I want to know, like, what was Mott like? We're sitting on press row at Mott right now before the shoot-around. There's video boards on both sides that are brand new this year. There's a video board thing on the opposite side. Videos here. The arena got renovated, I think, in the late 90s, probably after you were gone. I actually played some high school basketball games in here against Mission Prep when I was growing up, like 98, 99, that kind of circa that time. And I think it was brand new then in terms of the renovations. But like, talk about kind of what's different in here and how were the fans then during games? Did like zero people come towards the end of the season? How did that go?
So the structure is the same, obviously, right. But everything I'm looking at, this is the first time I've been in this gym in probably 15 years, everything's different. It used to be brown, pull-out bleachers. Now, you know, they're green, and it's much, much more pleasing to the eye, you know, obviously with the boards as well. Our backboards were wooden on the side. You know, that's no padding. You know, you think this stuff, you just take it for granted now. Glass backboard, snapbacks, ours. Right. And it's only 20 years ago. We didn't have snapbacks.
And you guys had guys who were throwing down.
Yeah. Not in the game, but they could do it in practice.
Yeah, I heard about some last night. Somebody was telling me about some stuff.
Yeah, I was the only guy on the team that I could barely touch the backboard. Yeah, but, everything's different. It used to be, you know, the main goals that we're looking at right now used to come down off the ceiling, things like that. And then in regards to your question about the fans... We had a couple of games where we had a good fan base. It wasn't like people stopped coming, but the next year, I know we're not really talking about that. Next year, they rock and roll. They won 17 games.
Right.
They had a new coach. They would either shoot a three-pointer or a layup. They were throwing out T-shirts.
Right.
You know, they were pressing for 40 minutes.
Right.
So that program got going pretty quick after I was done. Once they got me out of there, then they started winning games.
Well, there were, you know, the guys who made it, I was looking at this, the guys who made it to the end of that year, were it's like half seniors out of like the eight, there was like four or five seniors out of the eight or nine guys who made it to the end of the year.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, they must have just brought in all new, I mean, they kind of all new guys. There were a few from your team that got to carry over, right?
Yeah, and they contributed. I mean, Jim Croy's out there. He played the next year and did well. Damien Levesque had an outstanding year. They put him on the top of the press. So
was he the best player on your team? Who was the best player on out of the eight or nine that finished?
Yeah, Damian. He led us in scoring. I think I was second. We had a really hard time scoring that year on. We just we had nobody that could put the ball on the floor. We had no athleticism. Yeah. Bucky out there right there, Bucky Tucker, he really literally could not dribble with his left hand. All he cared about was motorcycles. And all of us were concerned, too. I mean, we get back to Cal Poly. We're around here. I mean, it's an academic school. The teachers didn't give a darn.
That you were an athlete.
Yeah, I didn't care. You know, you better get your stuff in. And it's not like you could email your assignment in. There was no email. I remember like 1995, it was, people were like, hey, did you know that there's a thing called Hotmail where you could email somebody? And setting up a Hotmail account was, like, amazing. You know, you thought you were on the cutting edge. And then somebody said, did you know you could do this on a computer? Type in www.usatoday.com and see Cal Poly's name on there. Now you can see, you just go anywhere.
Right.
It's everywhere.
Right.
Your Twitter, yeah. It's just, you know, it's anywhere. You could find it in India if you want to know about Cal Poly basketball. But that was when technology was really just kind of just starting to kick in.
Walking down memory lane with David Dineen. Just kind of random question. What do you do now? Where do you live? What do you do?
I live in Las Vegas, and I work at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, as a counselor, advisor. Okay. So I've worked there for about 9 years after I graduated from
college. In a specific, like, major or just in general?
In general, yeah. Well, I mean, we deal with the School of Nursing a lot, okay. And kinesiology majors, nuclear medicine, okay. Comprehensive medical imaging, things like that. Okay. And I worked in pharmaceuticals after I graduated from Cal Poly. So it's a good thing, you know, people don't think about it, but Cal Poly being successful in basketball, more people are going to know, more people know where I went to college because they're all over the TV. You know, them making that little run last year, oh, you went to Cal Poly? Oh, I know them. Yeah. You know, like 20 years ago, people didn't know the difference between Cal Poly Pomona or Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, except the location, that was it. But athletics does help.
I'm going to get some other, like, teammate stories because I love the one about Bucky and getting stuck in a ditch. And I'm going to get some more of those in a second. But I also want to ask you, you know, in terms of alumni engagement, somebody described you last night as really good in terms of networking. But alumni engagement-wise, Alex Lambertson has come to town and really kind of organized it and kind of formalized it in terms of the alumni group with a basketball team. And I've done stuff with, like, the local alumni chapter here in San Luis Obispo. So what does that mean to you guys as former players this week to be brought back and be honored? You don't see a 1-26 team get honored very much, you know. And it seemed kind of even cathartic last night at the dinner when people were talking about it. Like, it seemed like it was kind of a weight, not only about weight off somebody's shoulders, because you guys are all pretty well adjusted, I think, but you know, at least based on your speeches last night. Sure. But like, what does it mean to you guys to be part of an alumni base that's formalized and then to come back as a team maybe in a little bit less conventional way?
Yeah, it's awesome, Owen. It's really special. It is, because that year it wasn't easy. We got hammered. I laugh now at all the guys. You know, they're all married and have kids. I tell people that season scarred me so bad I forgot to get married and have kids. 20 years later, I'm still reeling. No, it was to be back here. It's just you really do. I've stayed in touch with all these guys, but I don't see them as much as I should or could because I live out in the desert for some reason.
Sure.
And work at Tumbleweed Tech. You know, UNLV is a lot different from Cal Poly. Academically,
yeah.
It's a lot different. It's a lot tougher here.
Yeah, Cal Poly is a tough place. Yeah. So like, just in terms of like when did you meet Alex Lambertson and like just the specific like alumni like formalization of the group?
So after I had tweeted JD and told him, hey, did you know that it's 20 years? This is our 20-year deal. You know, Cal's always been I kept a journal from the entire year and I've stayed in touch with the guys. He's all, well, look, that's pretty, that might be for a good story. And he came out with the article.
And JD's a good friend of mine. Like,
is he? Okay.
He definitely, like, will jump on that.
Yes. Sure, yeah. And his article was sweet.
Yeah.
You know,
it's great.
He had some great quotes and it was well written. And I think Coach Calero read it and he said, you know, this sounds like a good group. You know, we all graduated and, like you said, except for me. I mean, everybody got married and had kids. I'm 42. I'm still hanging on here. Maybe my parents keep
watching.
It's
all good. It's all good.
You got a little one in the background.
I do.
That's
yeah.
sweet, man.
Yeah.
Good job.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
Well, you don't look tired. I look like hell all the time. And then I got in touch with Coach Calero said, I'm going to put you in touch with Alex Lambertson. And like I mentioned last night, I mean, his fault, putting these things together, anytime you put on an event, like we had a Cal Poly reunion about 5 years in Vegas, and I had to put that together. That's not easy.
Right.
Getting people here, like getting these guys
at
here.
At the same time.
Yes.
Right.
Because you're dealing with families, you have cost, people got to drive here, people have lives, right? So Alex, you know, he was very patient with me because I had all these questions. I wanted it to go smoothly. He said they had some horror stories about guys getting up there and talking for 35 minutes about their high school days. And I'm trying to tell the guys, hey, we don't want to, you know, we're already 1-26 to begin with. Let's not make an ass out of ourselves when we get up there and talk, right? So
no, I thought it was really cool last night. And the dinner where you have other alums that are there as well and the team, you know, it's got to feel good to kind of be somebody who can, I mean, that's what you do anyway. You're a counselor. That's kind of your job, right? But to see your team be able to like mentor maybe a younger group of kids.
Yeah, well put. Because about four of those guys told me before that night that they were not going to go up there and speak. And I think what you said, like kind of a relief, like maybe this is some closure, if you will, got up there. And there were some guys like Jim did a great job. He said he was going to go up. And I think you know, maybe I kind of lightened it up a little bit and guys got up there and shared
had to defend themselves after after the stories that you told.
And there's some other ones, right? I mean, you got to keep it clean to a certain extent.
No.
But we were college students just like guys are college students now. And we had our fun. And it's funny, we were talking about that U-Haul Bucky who's out there shooting around. The second year, I came down on a U-Haul again. He didn't want me to return the U-Haul. He wanted to throw a keg in the back of it and keep it for the entire quarter. Oh, come on, Bucky, I'm going to get that's an extremely late fee, man. Okay.
It's going to be cheaper to buy a keg
right
at that point, yeah.
So we had fun, you know, just like any college students, maybe too much at times. But it wouldn't have mattered if we just didn't have the athletes to compete that year. Bottom line.
So tell me about some of your teammates. We'll go into that because I really enjoyed the stories. And if you can, I mean, mentally maybe go down some of the roster and and talk about your guys.
There was about eight of us. Looking out at the court right now, Jim Croy is probably my best friend to this day. He, just a solid guy, has two daughters, married his high school sweetheart who he came down here with Cal Poly. She graduated from Cal Poly, 6'7", 205. Has a brother who's a highly successful college basketball coach. He coached at St. Mary's when they were really good.
So you mentioned 6'7", 205. You guys, like, there's no guys who are out of shape. I was noticing that last night. Like, everybody's, like, kept themselves in extremely good shape. Like, I don't know, maybe it's because I'm trying to lose weight, but that's, like, something I'm, like, noticing. Like, dudes in their early 40s who are, like, pretty fit.
Yeah, you know, like, Bucky's a fireman over there, so, you know, Damien's a cop.
Those guys, LA, you kind of have to, right?
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Jim Croy's got, I always kid with him, he's just got good genes, man.
Okay.
His mom is, like, 70, and she looks like she's 50, so
okay.
it has
okay.
nothing to do with him.
Okay.
He's just got
good. Okay.
And then I still love to play. We play at UNLV two or three times a week.
Yeah.
We have a lunchtime game for, like, faculty, staff.
Nice.
And three-on-three, I don't glorify it, you know, but I still like to get out and sweat.
Yeah, likewise, yeah.
Yeah,
for sure.
Right?
Yeah,
I mean, it's fun.
Yeah.
Some of the other guys, one guy that couldn't make it, Owen, was Chris Ott. He was actually our 7-footer on the team.
Okay.
He lives in Kansas, has two young daughters, is an attorney. You know, I can understand why he couldn't make it.
Yeah.
You
so
know.
The other thing that struck me was, like, success-wise, like, you guys are all, like, have your act together, it seems like. And you know, again, the idea that, like, you know, 1-26 team, you know, what does Joe say? Like, you know, the clock may run out. But we don't lose.
Right.
We may run out of time. We may run out of possessions. But we're not gonna. You know, we don't lose. Kind of struck and a chord. And I saw him back there, just with a big smile on his face. Joe Calero throughout the whole session, kind of looking at his guys as your guys. You know, as we're saying things, just kind of looking at guys, kind of trying to catch people's eye. You know, with points that you guys were making. It was pretty neat.
Yeah. My whole thing is, if you graduate with a degree from Cal Poly, and you should have some success in life. I mean, this is a pretty darn good school. Okay, I mean, and it put me in a position to get every job I've ever had. And you're right, though. I mean, most guys, fireman, detective, attorney, financial services.
Yeah.
Scott Chelsvik, the guy with the he has his doctorate in physical therapy.
Yeah.
Brian Hyde is like a successful businessman.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, like every single guy like just struck me as like.
You know why? Because Owen, at the end of the day, it didn't matter that we were getting our lunches handed to us and getting our asses kicked. When we came back to campus, it was like, hey man, I gotta get this paper in. My teacher doesn't give a flying darn that I'm on the basketball team, I looked like every other guy on this campus, just trying to get by.
Was there like the opposite of coddled athletes because of the referendum and everything that happened? By the time you got here, did you have a harder time in class, like with classes or teachers or anybody? You're not 6'8", so maybe that's less obvious for you. But.
Yeah, my teachers didn't know that I was playing basketball.
Okay.
They didn't, and they wouldn't have cared anyway, right? So
maybe for road trips, they knew you weren't going to be in class, or maybe you just didn't even tell them and you just missed class.
Just missed class. But what really got me through, what all these guys were pretty good at is when we were here, we went to class. Like, I was an average student, but I literally, like, talked my way into a degree at Cal Poly. I would always go to office hours, made sure the teacher knew my name, right? So in the end, if it was borderline, okay, he gave it the old college try. I'll give him a C, maybe, right? You know, rather than a D. You know, sometimes you have to do those things, right?
Which is a lesson. I mean, that's a lesson,
right?
Too.
Yeah, correct.
For sure. So tonight we're gonna honor, or Cal Poly is gonna honor the alumni team from the first Division I team. It's been 21 years now, I guess, right? 20.
Yeah.
So you kind of told me some stories, but I really liked the Las Vegas story that you told about going to play in Southern Utah or something like that.
Yeah, Brandon Wilkerson, who's an educator in Kern County, we flew into Las Vegas to go play Southern Utah, which is about 3.5 hours north of Las Vegas. And Brandon used to just vanish out of nowhere, especially in this gym. We'd be going through defensive drills, and he would just run out the door. We're like, where's he going? And, oh, that's just Brandon. He'd, like, run to the restroom. I don't know if he had, like, irritable bowel syndrome or something like that. I don't know, man. But he went and used the restroom at McCarran International Airport in Las Vegas. And Coach Beeson was just fed up, you know, with him leaving without telling us. And nice defense, buddy. And we left, right? In today's day and age, a coach would get fired for that. That's like a lawsuit pending, right? If something happens to that child or that student or, you know. So we take off for Southern Utah, which in a van is probably closer to 4 hours. And somehow Brandon got on a shuttle, which I found out last night. And like, this is pre-cell phone, no texting.
Right.
So
well, right. I mean, that's right.
Just got on a shuttle somehow. And I don't know how, like, Madison St. George, which is, again, like 2 hours now north, and we're there gassing up the vans, and he just magically appears? And how does that happen?
Halfway there? At a random gas station.
Right.
Oh, that's great.
It just shows up. I'm like, how did you make it here? And I just found out last night he got on a shuttle and just somehow made it there. It's like, it was the oddest thing. And then we proceeded to get blasted 80-50.
What were some of the things? I really liked a lot of the kind of messages that the team kind of gave. And I'll ask Joe this tonight after the game, you know, in terms of what were some of his favorites. But did any, like, really resonate with you that some of your teammates, you know, the messages that you guys, as you talked to the current team, what were some of the ones that maybe were your favorites?
My favorites were, and, you know, sometimes you suppress your feelings and you try not to use trigger words. Because when you talk about Coach Beeson, he was our coach, right? And I knew if I started going down a route, like, I could do it now, you know. You can get emotional in some situations because he was our college basketball coach and he gave me an opportunity to play college basketball. And so when they started, you know, talking about Coach Beeson and how much he was a gentleman and a father first and just an overall good person, you hear that a lot. But, you know, even during the end of it, I think Coach Beeson knew he wasn't cut out to be a Division I coach, and he would tell you that.
Interesting.
Because the recruiting is just on such a higher level. You have to go out, you have to know people in Texas and New York and bring kids in, and he didn't have those type of contacts. He was a West Coast guy. And so to answer your question, it was more when people started talking about Coach Beeson and, you know, a couple of guys got choked up, Tons and Brian Hyde, and that's good. You know, I'm glad somebody dove into that psyche when that's hard to do sometimes in front of a group of people.
I thought that, you know, the camaraderie that you guys still kind of shared enough to rib each other a little bit or to call each other out a little bit from time to time is something that, you know, I played like high school sports, but that's something that, like, you kind of always are, like, nostalgic for, is that kind of level of, you know, what it means to be on a team with somebody. And I just thought it was pretty cool that you guys are all still as in touch as you are after so long and despite the lack of on-court success that you had.
Right. And it's 20 years now. So, you know, you got to laugh at it now. And we're all grown adults. And, still to this day, I'm just happy to, I was able to go to Cal Poly, graduate. I can tell people I played college basketball. I wasn't the greatest. I actually, that year, I mean, I kind of ripped myself, but I was second in the team in scoring. I was all league. I made all conference. I led the team in assists, field goal percentage, free throw percentage, because we were so bad, somebody had to score.
you said you hit the first three in the history of Cal Poly?
Yeah, at Boston College.
And then?
And then Boston College went on a 27-4 run after that. It was like one of those games that was like 5-3, and then you look up, and it was 35-4, something like that.
I thought what people talked about in terms of you keeping a journal is a super interesting thing, and that's got to be something that, like, in Cal Poly lore, you know, and maybe you wouldn't want to share the whole journal, but like I thought that would be like a neat thing to be able to look through or to reflect on. And how often do you kind of take a look at some of that stuff?
Yeah, so I've written in that journal since 1991, and now we're in 2000, almost 2015. Wow. So wow. Every experience, every game is, and that's
since like what, junior college?
Correct. Yeah. Since I was 19, and now I'm 42. So, it's. Yeah, Jim's right. I mean,
it's not a journal anymore. It's a
binder. It's right. It's a thesis. It's a PhD. It's yeah. I can go back to October 22nd, 1992 and see what I did that day, and right. I've got every game documented, how many, you know, what the travel was like that year. The travel was brutal. Look at now, knowing how college athletics works a little bit. Yeah. Oh, and you know, being in higher ed, played Montana one time. We played Montana one time.
Cool. Sorry about that. So the recorder stopped, but you were talking about kind of the differences and travel and all the things. I mean, it's kind of cool to see Cal Poly kind of step up along with other universities. And I think that was kind of the point of that original vote, was to say, are we going to go up a notch? Or are we going to stay where we are in terms of athletics? Have you got to meet Don Oberhelman besides last night very much?
Briefly.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. One of the cool things, I think, when I come is, like, you know, the interest level both of the president and of the athletic director in a program like the basketball program. Do you think that things like what they're doing, how do you feel about what they're doing like this weekend and kind of overall direction of the program and what you know about Joe Calero and so forth?
Yeah, they're making a commitment to improve. Well, like nothing like this went on 20 years ago, you know. So just to be, you know, for them to reach out and bring us back here is awesome. But I think as a university, you have to make a commitment. Like, all right, like you said, are we going to go forward with this? Are we all in? And that's kind of what's put Cal Poly, you know, why they're successful now is, hey, we want the basketball program to be relevant. And they hired Coach Calero, somebody who's, you know, just balls out and a grinder and do whatever it takes to get players who can win games and, you know, be student athletes first. So Cal Poly, I mean, they said this last night, the average GPA is a 3.97 now. You know what every one of us said last night? We went and had a couple drinks afterwards. We're like, none of us would have gotten to school here 20 years ago. I was a junior college transfer with like a 3.0, you know. But average GPA, 3.97?
Right.
Come on.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's some serious stuff.
And so you got to compete with all those guys when you go to the classroom. If you're an athlete, you got to compete with all those people.
Yes.
Right.
And you're exhausted. Like our practice schedule, we'd meet in this gym at 11 and be done at 4 with weights. I mean, it's a 5-hour commitment every day when you're an athlete. The average student might be able to go take a power nap in between classes. I remember going to classes and just the hardest part was staying awake. You know, you're so sore, and but you can't make excuses, so you got to go to class.
Well, David Dineen, I really appreciate you taking the time. I'm going to go let you get a few shots up over there while you can before the players start too. I see a couple of your teammates over there doing the same. And enjoy this weekend, and hopefully we'll stay in touch.
Definitely. Well, thanks a lot for having me.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Fansmanship Podcast. For more podcasts and more in-depth sports discussion, go to fansmanship.com.
Well, I've been stuck on down in trouble town. It's a lonely place, it's true. Streetlights so bright they blind my vision, and the people on the streets they beat me up till I'm black and blue. You lift me up. My way.
signs